cervix, the podcast. The podcast where pelvic health physiotherapist Emma Brockwell and Gráinne Donnelly talk to incredible guests who help lift the lid and bust the myths on all things pelvic health.
Hello everyone, Emma and I are so excited to be back for season 5 of At Your Cervix, the podcast. We're really sorry about the delay. We've had an incredibly busy year. We've been here, there and everywhere, and Emma has even been down to Australia, but she'll tell you more about that soon. For today, we are going to meet Kiva. Kiva is a really, really special person who has shared her story and experience of living with symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction. I'll leave all the details for the episode. It's a really good one. It will help both members of the public who may be experiencing similar symptoms and also the health professionals and fitness professionals who are serving these women, helping gain insight into the perspective of the woman, the difficulties that they may experience, and yeah, just all around how to improve how we serve and support these women and how to help women access the help they need. Really excited to hear what you think about it. Let us know, and yay, so excited to be back. Chat soon. Bye.
Today we have a topic that is actually long overdue. Emma and I have discussed about getting someone on to talk about the topic of pelvic organ prolapse for a long time now. I'm delighted to be introducing another fellow Northern Ireland guest. I've got a habit of doing this, bringing in people from around me. I'm sure thinking I'm taking over with Northern Ireland and Ireland. But today we have Kiva Cummins, and Kiva is a primary school teacher on a career break. She's a stay-at-home mom of four, might add. And she currently has the Big Hill House, which is an Instagram profile and much more, where she keeps herself busy with all things self-build, interiors, kids, fashion, beauty, and occasionally some dancing. And it's really, I follow it, and I have to say it's a really positive account to follow. It's keeping it real. There's a nice positivity about it, and I have to say it's something that I really look forward to. So well done on that account, Kiva, and welcome to At Your Cervix, the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start off by letting you tell us a little bit about your experience of pregnancy and postpartum, because you've done it several times. So how has that been, and how did it change this time around?
Well, three babies were born in the Middle East, so I think that played a large part of my journey, and being back to work after 45 days, and the aftercare over there wouldn't be much follow-up. You're just sent home with the baby, basically. There wouldn't be any six-week checkups or anything like that. You don't have the public health nurse coming out every day for the first 10 days. So there's just none of that. You have the baby and you're sent home. So,
wow.
And then you're back to work after 45 days. So,
wow, that's so short.
Yeah. At the time when you're in it, and I suppose I knew nothing about pelvic floor health. I just had a baby and my goal was the baby, and you sort of put yourself on the back burner, and I knew at 6 weeks I had to go back to work, so that's the focus. But now looking back on my journey, I think that those three pregnancies and being back to work after 45 days played a huge part in probably why after baby number four I ended up with prolapse.
What do you do for work? Are you an active worker or desk worker?
Primary school teacher. So yeah, there's not much, and you're not allowed technically to sit down over there. So yeah, you're on your feet a lot. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a big ask, you know, after 45 days of having had three babies in time to go back. Oh my goodness. How on earth did you manage?
Yeah, well, it's the norm over there. You have a nanny. So she obviously saved me for being able to go back to work. So, and she was there in the evenings to help me with as well. But yeah, in terms of everything healing, you know, at 6 weeks, I still would have been bleeding going back to work, definitely. So yeah.
It's pretty full on. And so after three babies, would it be fair to say that you had no signs and symptoms of pelvic organ prolapse?
No, from what I knew, no. But then as my physio has explained, it was probably happening, but I just wasn't aware, because that's the thing. Loads of women can have it to a certain degree and not even know that they have it. And then there was nothing, like I didn't even know women's health physios existed. I know in the north and the south, possibly they do the the mommy MOT afterwards, isn't it? It's like a really thorough check. So none of that was ever mentioned to me, ever. Pelvic floor health, doing your pelvic floor exercises. It's 8 years now. My eldest is 8 years. So it's only last summer when this all happened that I started to learn or know that women's health physios existed.
Oh my gosh. So tell us more about that fourth baby then. So you were pregnant last year, is that right?
2 years, yeah, 21. He was born Christmas 2021. So I've had four big babies and I've had a 17-week loss and three inductions in Abu Dhabi, and then Potty, number four, decided to come himself. I was booked in for the induction, but didn't. He came on due date and a natural delivery. There were four natural deliveries, but the three inductions, he wasn't an induction. And it was a much different experience for me compared to the three induction deliveries. Much nicer, easier. He was my fourth baby. He was probably the easiest pregnancy out of them all. Everything just went so smoothly. And then he was 7 months whenever I realized one day that something just didn't feel right.
And that's interesting. And I think that it's really interesting to point out for our listeners, because I think people always assume that if you're going to get some sort of pelvic floor dysfunction after having a baby, you'll know about it straight away. But initially, you probably felt you were recovering okay, nothing untoward, easy pregnancy, smooth delivery. And it was at that 7 month time frame. And what did you notice?
So it was, had been a long week. He was teething. He wasn't well. I was on my feet. He wasn't sleeping. So there was a lot of carrying him around. He's big for 7 months. And I was at my sister's down south, and I went down to get clothes for the kids that evening. It was a really warm day, and I was in a really low squat at the suitcase in the bedroom. And it's nearly like that pop sensation. I stood up, and it was like a bulging heavy, there was just something there that shouldn't have been there. And I panicked, went to the bathroom, had a quick look, horrified, could physically see something outside of my vagina, basically, and called my mom and sister and asked them to look. And my sister was like, oh yeah, that looks like a prolapse. And I was like, a what? She was like, yeah, you know. And I said, what is a prolapse? What? And then of course the phone came out, Googling. And then and then we were there another 2 days, and honestly, I could barely move. It just happened in a flash for me. And it was so debilitating. Is that the word? Like, I just couldn't be on my feet. I was in agony. My mind was racing. I thought my uterus was falling out. I actually at that stage thought it was my uterus that I could see. I later learned it wasn't. It was actually my bladder. I relied heavily on my mom and my sister for 2 days, and then we came back north. It was the 12th of July weekend here, so everybody's on holidays. And I had to wait till Monday to call the GP, and I told her on the phone. And then she said, well, it's not an emergency. First appointment's Wednesday. So we went in on Wednesday. And it wasn't a good experience. So because I left that appointment feeling the way I felt, then I spent the next few days, and I reached out to the mommy physios on Instagram, who then, from that point then, it was like the negative experience that it was in the initial few days for me started to then just turn around and become slightly more positive. And then I very luckily got in with a cancellation with Kira up in Active Physio in Oma.
Oh, but yeah, good to hear that nice network, because it was like people signposting you to where you need to get to. And
yeah,
Kathy, I actually went to university with Kathy, and then I know Mary Angela just through being friends with Kathy. But I think Kira's was a small world, but I'm glad you got to where you needed to go.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. I still remember I'd never spoken obviously to them before, and I sent a voice note on Instagram to just a stranger. I didn't know which one of them was going to answer, but I was just floored. It absolutely floored me.
It's
and
not
I felt
airy.
So alone. Yeah.
Can I ask you about that? Because we hear that a lot in clinic, that women will seek advice or they will reach out to Dr. Google. And obviously hear really quite overwhelming stories about what the future holds. If you have a pelvic organ prolapse, what it means. And sometimes, unfortunately, there are some negative stories where a woman will go and see a healthcare professional or a GP and not hear such great news around what their diagnosis is and what it means. What were you told initially when you went to see the GP?
Yeah, it was a cold experience for me. Like I was crying from the onset almost. She said she'd have a look. She looked, examined me. She diagnosed me with uterus. I need to get the terms right. She said it was my cervix and, or uterus, cervix and posterior wall. So I know that the bladder is the anterior wall, correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was the other two that I was diagnosed, that she said that I had. And she said she could fit a pessary, but that you know, it might fall out. And if it falls out, I'd have to come back. And of course, then the pessary is produced and I was in shock.
Scary.
I was
like,
what? What? How does that go? Where does that go? How did that go in there? And then that was scary. And then, you know, there was talk of was I finished having kids, you know, a hysterectomy would have been an option if I wanted to go down that road, that there was Botox injections that I could try, that there was a really long wait, that she could have referred me to a gynecologist, but that there was a really long wait of over 2 years. And in the meantime, just make an appointment with a women's health physio. So I asked her, did she know any? And yeah, she said that she'd heard of Kira. So then I came home and done all of that. So I came home and an hour later, the pessary fell out. So after the, I just didn't want to go back then. And then that's why I reached out to the mommy physios, who then pointed me in the direction of also Kira and explained. They just explained. And I was also told, like, no, absolutely no running, no exercise, no, try and put your feet up as much as possible. I said I was a mummy of four. That it,
impossible it was massive. To do that.
Yeah. And I'm on my feet all day long. Like, I don't sit down in the house. So there was a lot to take on after that appointment.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I think it's sadly fair to say that in clinic, I suspect both Gráinne and I certainly have heard that story a fair amount, and I think at this stage it's just important to highlight that absolutely the first go-to is a pelvic health physio when your GP or healthcare professional thinks that you have a pelvic organ prolapse. So I'm really pleased that you didn't let that experience stop you pursuing onward treatment, because I think things may have turned around for you hopefully when you saw the mummy physios.
Yeah, well, and it is largely because of that appointment and that experience and how I left feeling after that appointment that really made me want to then speak out about it. And because I have the Instagram page and most of my followers are mummies with kids, I just felt like this is just not good enough. There's not enough help in place. There's not enough support in place. I later found out after my appointment with Kira that I actually didn't have the cervix or the uterus one or the posterior one, that they're all fine and in the right positions and looking good after four babies. But I had the anterior wall, which is a bladder prolapse. So I was completely misdiagnosed at that appointment, which also caused a lot of Googling over that weekend. And you know that the posterior wall is slightly harder to treat. The one I have is the more straightforward one to treat. So that was good news for me.
Yeah, especially in terms of getting a pessary that works for it. And it's just the technicalities. Like in one element, I'm glad that you mentioned at the beginning that, you know, a lot of women have some degree of dissent and don't have symptoms, because for a lot of us, particularly who have had vaginal deliveries, some degree of dissent is actually completely normal. Like, we're not expecting everything to be upright, perfect, the way it was when we were much younger. But it shouldn't be to the stage that it's either causing symptoms or impacting any of the functions of that area. So a lot of times when people have prolapse, they either might have bladder symptoms, either leaking or urgency or difficulty emptying, or bowel symptoms, which might be difficulty emptying the bowel. And that can be frustrating because they think they're constipated, they get treated for constipation, but it's a structural thing. So I'm glad that you went somewhere and got a proper thorough examination. You know what it is. And you got to try another pessary.
Yes. Right? So I learned then that the GPs just have this standard. It's a really hard one.
PVC.
It's PVC. It's really not nice. I have it. I took it home. I handed it to my husband to joke around with them and be like, see what I'm dealing with. And I sent it into the WhatsApp groups with my friends, and everybody was horrified, but at least I was raising awareness even with them. Some of them are new mommies, and you know, we had a good laugh about it, that this is what I'm walking around with. So yes, Kira then, thankfully, there's lovely ones that the Women's Health videos have. They're bendy and
silicone.
Obviously I was still horrified. So I said, well, what if this comes out? The last one came out. There's different sizes as well. So she fitted me for the correct size. That was the first thing. And they can move with bowel movements, obviously, and they can slip out on occasion. And it does take a couple of goes maybe to get it right. So it did come out. And of course, I rang Kira in a panic again, and she squeezed me in. But they will teach you, women's health physios will teach you how to put it in and out yourself. But of course, mentally, I wasn't ready yet. So she just worked with me and gave me the time to mentally be ready to learn how to do it myself. And it takes 10 seconds. And if it comes out now, I'm able to put it in myself. But like it goes, it's in now. She sees me every 3 months, and from one appointment to the next, it might never move. So it's just in there, and I don't know what's in there, and it's doing its job, and I can go about my daily life. Yeah.
Do you wear yours all the time?
Yeah, I don't take it out. It's just in there.
Because you can, obviously, if anyone's listening and
yes,
try a presser, you can, for a lot of them, you can take them in and out.
Yeah.
Women may only choose then to wear them when they're exercising, for example.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of down to personal choice, really. Silicone, it's an inert product, so it's not going to cause you any harm. But as you've highlighted, it is important to stay in contact with the physio and have regular checkups just to check that the tissue integrity is sound and all feels well. How are you symptomatically with the pessary? Do you have any symptoms of pelvic organ prolapse?
No, that's like the best thing for me. And I'm exercising I'm with the mummy physios. I'm doing their core strength and conditioning program. And so I've gone from a grade 2 coming into 3, and I'm at a grade 1 with pessary, and my goal is grade 1 without pessary. Kira said I'll never be a grade 0. Is that correct? Because I've had 4 babies.
Grade 1 would be normal for people after having a baby. I've had 4 vaginal deliveries too, and I imagine that there's bound to be some degree. There's definitely some grade 1s going on in there. Science tells me there has to be. I'm not going looking, because again, there's an element to, though, like Emma and I work in this, and this is our bread and butter. But I can only imagine that if I didn't work in this area and have that knowledge and awareness where stuff like this doesn't scare me, it would be absolutely frightening, to think something's coming down or something's not in the right place. How do you get it back in the right place? What do we do to fix it? Nobody talks about this area. Even if they do, they tell you to do pelvic floor muscle exercise. But what does that mean? How do I know if I'm doing them right? Like, there's just so many, we're setting women up to fail in many ways, because we give them sheets of paper and they don't know how to do the exercises. Like I say time and time again, you know, if you go to a personal trainer and you're trying to teaching you an exercise to do in the gym, they demonstrate it. It's in an area of the body that you understand and you know what the role of that area is. You look at it and you're like, oh, yeah. You try and do it. You do it wrong. They have to correct you. And that's us in areas that we see. Take it to an area that we have no information, knowledge, education about. It's really taboo. It's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we've one sheet of paper with one cue. And I always think that, like, no one cue works for everybody. Different people's minds connect to the area in different ways. So we need to be giving women a range of cues to pick between. So that's what I'm interested in, Quiva. What was your pelvic floor strength like? And have you been working on your pelvic floor? And how did you find doing pelvic floor training?
The strength, the grade of the pessary goes one way and then the strength goes the other way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think I'm strength 4, would that make sense?
4 out of 5, yeah, so she could release you a wee bit, so that's quite good, that's decent, she's probably happy with that.
Yeah, so she has noticed, she examines me internally at every appointment, and there's improvement, so that was last July, so we're coming up and onwards of a year, and I got a new pessary at my last appointment, simply because it's been 9 months, and it starts to lose its, you know, it's silicone, so it was not as supportive as, you know, a brand new one. So I decided to change to a brand new one. And yeah, perfect. Like I'm about to start lifting heavier weights. I can do that because of the pessary and because I've been working on the pelvic floor. And I'm not back running yet, but I'm working towards that. That's my goal. I'd love to be back. I love HIIT style training. So, and I want to do all of that without surgery. And if I have to keep the pessary in, I'll keep the pessary in because it's like a little lifesaver.
Yeah, and I think it's like a sport. Like we wear bras to support our breasts and things. Like there's nothing wrong with something that provides a little bit of support. And I think that the response that you have, like I followed your journey, basically, like you, particularly in Northern Ireland, when you started to share your journey, it went a bit viral.
Yeah.
Because everyone I could relate to, but everyone was also like on that journey, horrified, distressed with you, because nobody wants to be feeling like this and no one should have to feel like this. But it was like night and day when you talk about getting your pessary in, and suddenly then you're doing your story, showing yourself, jumping about and doing exercise and doing core exercises and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yes, because you can do it. Whereas you could have easily went down a line of fear of, I'll never do this again, wrapping yourself up. And that's a very different life to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, being told you can't exercise, even for your mental health, whenever it's, you know, exercise is part of my day to day. And then being just told you can't do any of it, doing something that you love. And it, as I said, it floored me. And but whenever I spoke out about it, with the Instagram reel that I done, the messages I read and received from women were just horrifying how so many women are being failed.
It's huge, isn't it? And I think so. What's so brilliant about your story and how you share it is that women do still think that pessaries are only for older women. And seeing someone like yourself confidently wearing a pessary and having such a positive story, that's so empowering to someone who is probably a little fearful. You know, as we've said, they aren't the most attractive things to look at, and inside your vagina, it can be overwhelming. But I think if we can see that young, fit, healthy, amazing women like yourself are using them, it helps normalize the use of them. And, you know, that goes across the board when we think about healthcare professionals as well, thinking as well that pessaries are only for very old women. Traditionally, that is how they've been used, but they are for any woman with pelvic organ prolapse symptoms. So I think you sharing your story is just brilliant, and can be it'll be such a game changer for so many women. So well done, because that's
thanks.
What it did ultimately.
I actually asked my sister before, I said, I have this idea in my head. I want to raise awareness for this, because I felt I was failed in the beginning. And if it was me, that I knew there was lots more in the same boat. And I said, I want to hold the pessary and take a video of myself holding it. And she was like, oh, really? And she's a personal trainer. And she was like, do you not think maybe it's just too much information? And I was like, why is it too much information? Why is that? Like, this is my life. This is not just my life. This is what we go through. We have babies and we have to go through this. So I'm so glad I did. And she said to me shortly, or a few months after it, and she's like, no, you know what? You were just right to do it the way you done it. So,
that's the problem. If we don't talk about it, it becomes a secret. And then everybody who's going through it goes through that dark place of not knowing what to do. They're the only person in the world who feels like they have it. There's no information. Or if you go into Google and you're like, well, what's real? Where do I go with this? There's so much flying at me. You see pictures, you're like, is that going to happen to me? And it's just a really, really, really scary place. And like, I do think that there needs to be much, like, things have come a long way in the last 10 years. We're talking about pelvic health topics, and social media has played a huge role in that. Given, you know, it's funny, when I started doing social media, I remember doing the odd post about urinary incontinence or prolapse, and like, you know, my husband's physio as well at the time, he would be like, oh my God, stop posting about this. you're going to scare off all the guys, the footballers. But then he started to realize that like they all have significant others and partners, and you get like a DM, oh, does your wife do physio for woman stuff? Like, you know, and he's realizing that it relates to everybody. But it started to be this thing where people mightn't be talking about it yet, but they'll start to find information online. And that's where you had a huge strength, because, and especially because of your following and the type of people who are following you, you could tap into them on a topic that is relevant to them, whether they have symptoms or not, because everyone wants to know about it or to know what they can do to help, or they have a friend or someone who has symptoms. Now, the other thing I'll ask you is, did you ever use Vagifem or anything?
No,
we never had to use it, because sessometimes to prep the tissues for a pessary, women are advised to use Vagifem, which is like a little pessary. It contains some estrogen. It can help plump out the tissues. Some people don't need it. But it's just, I'm trying to think of what other things people might hear of on this journey so that they're not scared when it comes to the time of it. And they know that these things are all pretty par for the course. And what do you think needs to change so that your situation wouldn't have been as thrown in at the deep end as it was?
I think women need educated. It should be mentioned at every follow-up. The check, you know what, I'm in a privileged position, because I'm paying to see Kira, and the NHS wait, I haven't heard anything from the referral over nearly a year ago. It should be, I know in some countries like France, they have like free women's health checkups right up until nearly 6 months post-baby, I think. There was a lot of statistics coming through at the time when I talked about it. But yeah, it should be compulsory that every woman is at least given the six-week MOT check anyway to find out where they're at.
Yeah,
for sure.
Certainly something we'd love to see happen for every woman. Do you think it should be a discussion that we have during pregnancy? Do you think we should be informing women about the risks of pelvic organ prolapse and options?
Yes.
Yeah, because I think ultimately, I think we are still we're doing women a disservice by just not telling them the realities of pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum recovery. And I do think, I don't know if in Northern Ireland you have NCT. Do you have NCT groups?
No, we have Sure Start, which I think is similar to it, but it's support groups where you meet up with other moms and you might get some education. Yes.
Yeah, but this is before. So you would join an NCT group when you're pregnant. It's kind of an expensive way of making friends, in my opinion.
Oh, you pay for it? Is it private?
Yeah.
We get antenatal classes in the NHS.
Oh, right. So we get that, but you can top yourself up and do NCT classes, but they will educate you on breastfeeding and childbirth, but they never, ever mention pelvic health. And I think those sorts of classes, maybe even the antenatal NHS classes, which I'm afraid I didn't go to because I was as part of the NCT.
Because you went privately, Emma.
Sound like such. I'm not a snob, and I'm definitely all for the NHS antenatal classes. I think they're brilliant, but I just happened to choose a slightly different avenue. Might have to edit this bit out. But we didn't get any pelvic health chat, and I presume probably in the antenatal. Someone is, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if the antenatal classes offer any women too much education around pelvic health. Do they?
They do talk about pelvic floor and the need to do it, and you want to strengthen your pelvic floor because so that you don't have symptoms, but they don't delve too much into it. And it is a difficult one, because I can understand that there's so much to cover in a snapshot. And I can also understand that usually they're like, as the NHS is reformed, like it used to be the physios. I used to do antenatal classes when I was a younger physio, but now the physio role doesn't exist in them. Everything kind of streamlined and maybe midwifery led. And they maybe are not experts in terms of the pelvic health side of things. So it's not their, I suppose, bread and butter to be discussing. But it's also the fact that there's an element of, I know there's an element where people think they don't want to scare people. But as you say, Quiva, it then means that people are left scared in other ways because they don't have a lack of information.
Yeah. And then I know, and everyone kept saying to me, you have to remind yourself that GP is a general practitioner and they have to cover everything. Yeah. Then I just think that if they're not qualified enough, then they shouldn't be given the wrong advice out. And I had a lot of messages from women who were just totally dismissed by their GPs. And you've had a baby. This is life. This is what you're going to be dealing with. Go home and deal with it, kind of thing. And it's just so wrong, because it's not life, and that's not how life doesn't have to be that hard. And just because you've had a baby, no, you don't have to be dealing with the symptoms of prolapse. You know, there is help out there. So I think not giving wrong advice. Because I know some GPs are brilliant and very passionate about women's health, women's floor health, pelvic floor health as well. But that they're few and far between, I think, and you're lucky if you do get one of them. There's definitely a gap, there's like a missing part there as well.
Totally agree. And I think too, the message it sends out to them. So like, you know yourself, if you build up the courage to go and actually speak about this really embarrassing unknown symptom that you have, if someone tells you, oh, that's just part of it, like you've had a baby, you'll not bring it up again. You'll just suffer in silence. So how long does that woman suffer in silence before she finally learns that something could be done about it? So we need to be better at going, even if it's a case of, well, I'm actually not sure what the answer is, but I know that there are some people who will. Let me make some calls and get back to you. Let me find information, send it to you. I do agree that there needs to be more done for that. And there needs to be a better way of triaging in a way, because I understand that pelvic health symptoms are not life or death, and they're not a medical emergency in terms, but they are an emergency in terms of how they make us feel and impact our life and affect that person who's at a really transitional moment in their life. They've got a house of kids, they've got a new baby. Like, we need to be keeping physical and mental well-being of all our women supported. And so to hear, oh, well, so that's not urgent. It's urgent to you. It's urgent. You know what I mean? It's urgent to us in that situation. It's actually more than urgent. Like, you need it sorted now. So we need a better way of having different tiers of triage, and so that we're taken seriously, because I do think that women just go and have babies, and there's been generations that have got on with stuff, and you do feel for them now, because like, it is not an easy task to go through pregnancy, have babies repeatedly. There's always going to be some challenges that we feel. And I think that it can be viewed by the wider population who maybe aren't having babies and things as if it's an easy sort of thing. Sure, you're made to have babies. That's normal. Whereas there's a lot of things that come along with it that we do need access to support for.
Yeah. And also I had a few messages because I was so focused on like having a baby, and I had a prolapse because I had a baby. You actually don't ever have to have had a baby to have prolapse. There was a few messages from people who've never had children but have prolapses. So yeah,
that's a good one, because there can be so many reasons why people get it, and it's usually a combination of factors for why we get it even after having babies. So yes, childbirth, particularly vaginal deliveries, are a big risk factor, but somebody who's had a childhood history of chronic constipation and straining, or chest conditions and their cough and anything that puts strain and pressure in that area, or if someone just has connective tissue hypermobility and things, maybe more subjected to the likelihood of it. And of course, any of our transitional life stages, so into pregnancy, postpartum, but also when we start to reach that perimenopause and beyond situation where our hormones are starting to change and our connective tissue start to change, you can have someone who never had any pelvic health issues suddenly out of nowhere seem to get them. So it is about educating women, empowering them, because if you are someone listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I'm so glad I have no symptoms, you need to be training your pelvic floor, and you need to be preempting that next transitional and that next risk factor that we come across as women, because by design we're set up to fail.
I know. And funny actually, because I kept saying to Kira, I think this happened. She was like, what were your symptoms leading up to this? And I honestly said nothing. Like it was just a switch and it happened. But she explained that it's all to do with like your hormones and where you are in your breastfeeding journey and how long after you've had the baby. And I actually felt lucky then that it didn't happen to me until 4 babies in and 7 months post 4 babies, because then I had lots of messages from people who had prolapse, like first time mommies who had their baby and then had the prolapse to deal with, and not just the bladder prolapse or the other types of prolapse as well. And I can't imagine what that must be like to have it on your first.
I think that it would even potentially, it would have a huge implication on how you view pregnancy postpartum, and maybe you're even want, like, there'd be a fear for subsequent deliveries because you nearly always have that fear of making things worse. Yeah. Even though for anyone listening to this, usually if you do, because of pregnancy, childbirth, end up getting some degree of laxity or less support, usually that's done with that delivery. And you don't usually further that. And I just like to make that point for reassurance, because I often have women who are afraid to go for a subsequent pregnancy. But it's just about what can you do to manage where you're at now, and how can you manage that through subsequent pregnancies and postpartum recoveries. Have you been back to the GP since? And has your tale been, you know, they haven't had any report about how you're doing and the journey that you took?
No, definitely not. And I won't be. But I'm, you know, everything happens for a reason, and that's how I sort of go through my life. Is that it was such a negative experience. That's the way it was supposed to be for me. I've learned a massive lesson, and as a result, I've raised awareness. Because if that had been a pleasant experience for me, there's no way I would have done. I don't think there would have been a way that I would have been so passionate about the raising awareness. It was
a really good way to frame it too, because it was really intriguing. You know, that for anyone who doesn't even know what that is or hasn't read the caption, like, what is she doing? So it was a really nice way of doing it. And I do think that, like, I've seen that again. I'm in my little bubble of where I follow lots of pelvic health related people, lots of people in my world. But, like, I mean, I think anyone and everyone has shared that there is. So, like, it's done a huge service to women, and a lot of people have you to thank, because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who went and booked appointments and checks and just in case sort of MOTs on the back of you sharing your story. And I also, as Emma says, I think it's also because you're so relatable in many ways and keeping it real. And it's kind of debunking that idea of what I hate about Instagram and social media, where people can be living perfect lives that nothing ever goes wrong. And I think that that's been a huge thing, where people can look at you and go, oh my goodness, like, if she's even experienced this, well, that if she can do that, I can do this. Yeah. And it gives people that courage. And just even the fact that lots of people have been able to reach out to you and you've been so open to that is fantastic. So are you training your pelvic floor regularly? That's what I want to know.
Took 3 weeks off there because I went to Abu Dhabi with the four kids.
Followed it on Instagram.
But then Abu Dhabi is a workout on its own, going through that airport. And 10 days, I went, my husband was working. So
I was going to say, can I just mark it? Because you went on your own. There's no way. There's no way that I could do that. How did you, like, your kids must be just really well behaved.
Yeah, I know. We've good kids. And the three of them born over there, but they just love the whole buzz of traveling and airports, and they're 99%. Every day there was moments, but they're easily managed, and, you know, there's no behavioral issues or anything, thank God. So I wouldn't have been able to do that trip only for the pessary. Just no way. Like, I had potty back in the sling again, and it didn't even phase, but the pessary didn't come into my mind once when I was over there. So that just shows you.
Fantastic.
So good. Yeah. It's given you confidence back, hasn't it? And it's such a game changer. To be clear, you live back in Ireland now.
And yes, back in Ireland.
Right. Okay. Fair. Yeah. So what's next? What, your little one is now how old? Your youngest?
He's 18 months.
Oh gosh, wow. And so you have what ages are your children?
8, 7, 4, and 18 months.
Oh, you're amazing. You're just like Grania. Before kids. I've kept very quiet throughout this because I only have two. it feels like I've done only half the work that you guys have done. But are you still teaching? What does the future hold for you and your family?
My husband's teaching. I'm still set. We're home 4 years now this July. I am still settling back into life. I'm not settled. I would like to go away again. The Instagram page keeps me busy. Stay at home mom is one of the hardest jobs I've ever done. Definitely missing getting out to work, but the Instagram side of things has been just so lovely for me, and it has given me just something for me to do for myself and keep my brain ticking and creative, the creative side going while dealing with the kids at home all day, every day. So, yeah, I don't know what the future holds for me, really. I'm still winging it.
Will you continue to advocate for pessaries and support?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so passionate about that. I actually done Image magazine in Dublin. It featured me on last November's issue on the pelvic floor, which was amazing. And then Aoife down in Women's Health.
She's doing
a trial with, maybe you know about it, there's a new machine coming on the market. I was considering it, but then because now I'm at a stage one, because it's quite expensive, she's trialing it to see if it would be worth her bringing it in. But I chat to her a good bit and she keeps me up to date, because there's so many women worse off than me. I think I'm lucky that I have been able to do my rehab journey, because a lot of women are a lot older and nearly have been failed, I suppose, and have left it so long. And some of them have gone down the road of surgery and it still hasn't corrected it, because that's the thing. A lot of people will look for that quick fix, you know, for the surgery, because I know that there are surgeries that you can have, but there's no guarantees that the surgery is correct. Prolapse
should be your last option.
Ideally
you've explored all the other options before going down that road, because it is a big deal. And it's also really important that women who have had those forms of surgery have pelvic health physio after it as well, because there's a big hole there. You know, women are having these big surgeries and then that's it, thanks very much. But you would, I mean, we say it all the time, but you would never have your knee or your ankle surgically operated on and not see a physio. So the same applies for women with who have repairs, hysterectomies. You know, pelvic health physio rehab is essential, so that hopefully the surgeries don't fail, but it should always be a last resort, and having that discussion with like a multidisciplinary team is really, really key as well. So again, it's those messages that still need to be driven home to make those changes for women. But I think you are just incredible, a brilliant contributor
to
the world of pelvic health. It's brilliant.
You'll be plagued. You do know you'll be plagued for the rest of your life with pelvic health business. just so you know, everyone's got you pinned and everyone will be signposting their patients to you. Go check that at the Big Hill House. So strap up. but we really appreciate it. And I'd say this is, I'm sure there'll be lots of comments and questions that come in after this, but we'll put your contact details and everything in the show notes.
Yeah,
so anyone who wants to contact you or follow you or just want a bit of momspiration and see how you get on your life, because I love watching it.
I
love it. I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to do some DIY in my house is what I feel all the time. I'm like,
so do I.
It's the ones where you're across the land and on planks of wood, and I'm like, oh my God, don't do it.
But a lot of people were like, you're mad. But you know, my dad went to a lot of bother to get everything safe. There's no way he would let me do anything that's not safe. So
well, look, we thank you for sharing your journey and being so brave. I don't think you even realize how many women you're helping, and it's huge. And I'm delighted that you've had such a positive experience at this end. And I suppose I can't wait to see where it goes. And you know what? Maybe at some stage you'll give us an update, maybe further down the line, as to where your journey has went to, because again, the whole thing's fluid, and maybe you will get to where your goal wants to be when you're back to running, doing different things, and you can be that real voice of inspiration to people.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And thanks for having me. It's been lovely. I love chatting about it. It doesn't faze me now, from going from feeling so embarrassed to, like, I'll just talk to anybody about it that wants to listen. So
you should be a women's health physio. I'm telling you, you're so good at it.
Oh, I think you're absolutely. I always said midwives are angels. I had four amazing midwives, and just honestly, women's health physios, I can't even explain just the difference in the two appointments between the GP and walking into Kira that day. It was just, they were worlds apart. So I probably got myself in a little bit of trouble. At the time, you have to be so careful what you say on social media these days. But my experience, I would absolutely 100% tell anybody that is suffering with symptoms to just go to the women's health physio. But there's protocols in place and places where your first port of call, some people would say, should be the GP. But that wasn't my experience, and I was speaking from my experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, certainly for NHS referrals, you do have to go to the GP as the first point of call. And you know what? It's always good to, it should be good to get a differential diagnosis, I should say, like, because, you know, to make sure that it is just simply, not that I'm saying prolapse is simple, but to make sure that that's what it is and there's nothing else playing into it. But for anyone listening to this, if you are in a position where you can access care yourself, you don't need a GP, a review, you can book an appointment and go directly. So, and again, if a physio feels that you should go and see your GP, they're going to tell you to book an appointment with your GP anyway. Yeah. So you're covered that way. But again, we all just want to help women. And you know what? I have to say that GPs want to help women too. And like you said, they have so much to contend with. And there's a lot of training needs out there that we need to get better measures in place so that people are accessing the type of training that's needed and that is current and up to date. So there's a lot of work to be done, but conversations like this do a lot to help that along the way and raise awareness. And it's just, as you say, even just giving anyone listening to this the information, courage, confidence to advocate for themselves and challenge or push back a little bit or seek the type of treatment that they need. But let's have this conversation to be continued sometime, Pooja. And thank you so much again. And your baby's still asleep, so you've done really, really well.
Still asleep, probably winning. We're going into hour 2.5 now, so that's a great nap.
Good for you.
It was lovely to meet you, and thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your questions and feedback. And of course, if you love the episode, please leave a review and tell your friends and family all about the podcast. You can contact us on Instagram @@yourcervix_thepodcast or Twitter @@yourcervix_PM. Gráinne and I are really looking forward to catching up with you next week.